A curious thing happened in 1976. When the first index fund launched, Wall Street executives didn't celebrate. They mocked it. They called it Bogle's folly and predicted its swift demise. Why such hostility toward a simple investment product? Because it threatened to expose an uncomfortable truth. Most of the financial industry exists not to make you wealthy, but to make itself wealthy from your money. Here's what makes this revelation so powerful. It's not about complex trading strategies or insider knowledge. It's about arithmetic, the kind you learned in grade school. Every dollar Wall Street extracts in fees is a dollar that doesn't compound in your account. Over decades, those small fees don't just reduce your returns, they devastate them. A 2% annual fee might sound modest, but over 50 years, it can consume 61% of your potential wealth. You provide 100% of the capital, assume 100% of the risk, yet keep less than 40% of the returns. The rest? It quietly flows into the pockets of financial intermediaries who convinced you that complexity equals sophistication. Picture a wealthy family that owns every business in America. They receive all the dividends, all the earnings, everything. Life is simple and prosperous. Then the helpers arrive with a seductive pitch. You could do better than your relatives. Let us help you trade with them. The family agrees, and suddenly everyone's trading stocks back and forth, generating commissions with each transaction. More helpers appear, analysts to pick winning stocks, consultants to time the market, advisors to manage the advisors. Each layer extracts its fee. The family is busier than ever, yet their collective wealth grows slower. Why? Because they're still the same family owning the same businesses. They haven't created any new value. They've just hired expensive middlemen to shuffle papers while skimming profits. One wise family member finally asks the obvious question. If we collectively own everything, how can we collectively beat ourselves? The answer, of course, is that they can't. Every winner requires a loser, and the only guaranteed winners are the helpers collecting fees regardless of results. Stocks represent ownership in real businesses. Since 1900, they've returned about 9.5% annually, 9% from dividends and earnings growth, just 0.5% from valuation changes. Two markets operate simultaneously. The real market reflects actual business results, companies hiring workers, selling products, generating profits. This market is stable and predictable. The expectations market is the daily carnival of fear and greed where prices swing wildly on sentiment. This market is chaotic and random. Over weeks or months, the expectations market dominates. Over decades, the real market always wins. Benjamin Graham nailed it. In the short run, the stock market is a voting machine, but in the long run, it is a weighing machine. Your job isn't predicting tomorrow's votes. It's owning productive businesses and letting them compound wealth. Daily fluctuations are noise obscuring value creation. William of Ockham's principle applies. When multiple solutions exist, choose the simplest. In investing, that means buy every business in America and hold forever. It sounds too simple, which is why the financial industry fights it. The S&P 500 includes the 500 largest American companies, representing about 85% of total market value. A broader index covering all 3,600 publicly traded stocks delivers nearly identical returns. Those additional 3,100 smaller companies only represent 15% of total value. The mathematical reality is unassailable. All investors collectively must earn the market return before costs. After costs, the average investor must underperform by exactly the amount of fees paid. When 90% of actively managed funds underperform their benchmark over 15 years, costs guarantee most will fail. From 2001 to 2016, the S&P 500 outpaced 97% of large cap funds through the simple act of not charging excessive fees. In 1976, $15,000 invested in the first index fund grew to $913,340 by 2016. Of the 360 equity funds existing in 1976, only 74 survive today. Consider two investors starting with $10,000. The first earns 7% annually for 50 years and accumulates $294,600. The second earns 5% after costs and ends with $114,700, a difference of $179,900 siphoned off by intermediaries. Actively managed funds charge expense ratios averaging 1 to 2%, plus trading costs of roughly 0.5%, plus sales charges, often exceeding 2% annually. Index funds charge as little as 0.04%. That difference becomes devastating over decades through the tyranny of compounding costs. Before costs, all funds earn roughly the same gross return. They're investing in the same market. Low-cost and high-cost funds both earn 10.3% before fees. After costs, low-cost funds deliver 9.4% to investors, while high-cost funds deliver just 8.0%. Same skill, same market, dramatically different outcomes, determined entirely by what you pay. Morningstar confirms that expense ratios are the single strongest predictor of future fund performance, not manager pedigree, not past performance, not investment strategy, just costs. You don't get what you pay for in investing. You get precisely what you don't pay for. Beyond expenses lies another wealth destroyer, taxes. The average actively managed fund turns over 78% of its portfolio annually, generating substantial short-term capital gains taxed at ordinary income rates, often double the rate on long-term gains. Over 25 years, actively managed funds earned 7.8% annually before taxes, but just 6.6% after taxes. Index funds, earning 9.0% annually, paid far lower taxes because they rarely sell holdings. A $10,000 investment grew to $39,700 after taxes in the typical active fund, but to $68,300, a $28,600 difference attributable largely to tax efficiency. Even worse, investors typically earn far less than even those inadequate fund returns. Fund companies report time-weighted returns, while you experience dollar-weighted returns that account for when you actually invested and withdrew money. Evidence suggests investors earn roughly half what funds report. This catastrophic gap emerges from terrible timing and chasing past performance. During the 1980s and early 1990s, when stocks were cheap, investors put in just $18 billion. In 1999 to 2000, when stocks were wildly overvalued, they poured in $420 billion. They bought high, panicked during the crash, sold low, then missed the recovery. Since 1926, the stock market has delivered a 10% annual return, but 4.2% came from dividends alone. A $10,000 investment without dividends would have grown to $1.7 million. With dividends reinvested, $59.1 million. Actively managed funds treat this income with shocking indifference. Management fees are calculated on assets, not income, creating a perverse incentive where the component most valuable to investors matters least to managers. In growth funds, expenses consume 100% of dividend income. In value funds, 58%. Index funds with 0.04% expense ratios allow 96-98% of dividend income to flow directly to investors. Corporate dividend payments have remained remarkably stable through 90 years of economic cycles, dropping significantly only during the Great Depression, the 2000 to 2002 tech crash, and the 2008 financial crisis. This stability makes dividends the bedrock of long-term returns. The power of dividends isn't sexy. It's just mathematically certain. The exceptional 11.7% annual stock return since 1974 won't continue. That period featured unusual PE expansion, adding 2.9 percentage points. Today's 2% dividend yield versus historical 4.4% and 4-5% projected earnings growth suggest future returns around 6%. If PE ratios decline, returns could drop to 4% or less. Bonds look bleaker. Current 3% yields will likely persist, far below the historical 5.3%. A balanced portfolio might deliver just 3.6% annually before costs. Leading firms project similar modesty. AQR expects 4% real stock returns and 0.5% for bonds. GMO predicts negative real returns over 7 years. When markets return 4% and you pay 2% in costs, you surrender half your returns. Pay 0.05% instead, and you keep 98.6%. Over 30 years, this difference determines whether you retire comfortably or work indefinitely. This isn't pessimism, it's math. Low dividend yields and high PE ratios mathematically constrain future returns. You can't control markets, but you absolutely control costs. William Bernstein is blunt. It's truly terrible to own actively managed funds in taxable accounts, where taxes can drag performance by up to 4 percentage points annually. In a world profiting from confusion, clarity becomes revolutionary. The evidence is clear. Own low-cost index funds, maintain a sensible stock-bond allocation, and stay the course. Warren Buffett directed that 90% of his wife's inheritance be invested in a very low-cost S&P 500 index fund. I suggest Vanguard's. If the Oracle of Omaha trusts this approach for his family, consider it for yours. The financial industry showcases the handful of funds beating the market while ignoring hundreds that failed. They profit from complexity, from your belief there must be a better way than simply owning everything and waiting. There isn't. Start early, minimize costs, diversify broadly, rebalance periodically, and ignore the noise. The winning strategy is counterintuitive. Do nothing. Just stand there while wealth compounds. During 2008 to 2009, investors fled stocks at the bottom, then watched from sidelines as prices recovered 250%. From 2008 to 2016, 186 of the 200 largest equity funds delivered lower returns than reported because investors bought high and sold low. The choice is yours. Own 30 to 40 actively managed funds over your lifetime, paying excessive fees for disappointing results, or own one index fund delivering market returns minus nearly zero costs. Don't look for the needle, buy the whole haystack.